Yes, so welcome inside a Tuesday edition of the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you are with us today. Well, it was a late one last night, but UConn's pretty good. And I'm going to tell you why they're very good here in a little bit because, you know, I am by no means a basketball genius. You know, I rely on coaches, players that played, etc., and gather that info to learn things, to watch things for myself. But there were a couple of things about last night that absolutely stood out, and every coach, or not every coach, every program in America can watch what occurred last night and say, you know what, hey, we need to replicate that. And not a lot of it's schematic. A lot of it has to do with philosophical. And it was impressive. It takes nothing away from Purdue. That's what UConn's done to everybody. Everyone from top to bottom this season. Yes, they obviously didn't, didn't win every single game. But when they got to the end of the season, best versions of themselves. You know, you want to play your best basketball, your best of the best at the very end of the year, and that's what UConn did. There really wasn't anybody that challenged them, pretty much. I mean, the last two games against Alabama and Purdue, respectively. The first halves in both of those games were competitive, and then UConn got into exactly what they wanted to do and dictated the game. You know, it's a question I ask coaches quite frequently. You know, inflecting your style on the basketball game and how important that is. Golly, is it huge. Oh, my goodness. It is so big when you get to play your style. And again, you know, you can adapt to multiple styles. You can adapt to multiple types of basketball play. It's not that you're locked into just playing our way. And but, man, that was a UConn basketball game from start to finish last night. Even when Zach Edey went off early, it was right in the hands of UConn every single step of the way. So we'll dive into the specifics of that coming up here in a little bit. The transfer portal's out of control. It's out of control. It is. And by no means, when we are going to talk about the transfer portal coming up, are we discrediting the players, questioning their individual decisions. It is the system of the matter. It's the system. What it was intended to do, and you know, I think Michael Lewis hit it right at the beginning of this year. What the transfer portal was intended to do and the execution of it are two totally different things. I mean, it's unbelievable. NIL, transfer portal, etc. Like, you would think that these were set up for good intentions, but all it's doing is destroying mid-major college basketball again. And it's not just Ball State; it's a lot of different schools. You know, this has affected Ball State women's basketball, not just Ball State men's basketball. And it's got to be exhausting. It is. But as I explained before, and I would imagine most coaches that are in it, it's like they can't do anything to change it. So you got to play along with the rules and got to play along with the way the system currently is set. But it is. It's crazy. It is. I mean, this could be the second straight year for Ball State men's basketball where they have four of their five starters gone from the previous year, one to graduation and three in the transfer portal, three of the five. And you may have replaced one of them with bringing a player that left you last year back in Peyton Sparks. It really is interesting. And, you know, I go back to the comments that were made by Tom Izzo not too long ago, actually, right at the start of this NCAA tournament, about how we need to stop giving mid-majors who win their conference tournament an automatic bid. How much further you want to punish them? I mean, how much more do you want to benefit the Power Five conferences? Because again, the Power Five conferences are affected by the transfer portal, but not to the extent of mid majors, not to the extent at all. And it's been pretty wild to watch It really has. And not just Ball State men's basketball, but statewide in general. It is really interesting. So we're going to have Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News on the program coming up here in a little bit at 4:40. And we'll talk Ball State football spring game, but also the transfer portal craziness. Again, let me make this very, very clear, and I'll probably say this 5 or 6 times on the program because frequency gets the point across. This is not about the student-athletes that have entered their name. All they're doing is abiding by the rules. I mean, again, you know, the promises that they make to a program or a coach or a booster or whatever, at the end of the day, they have every right to do it the way they did. I mean, even last year when Jerron Coleman entered very, very late at the end of the year, I mean, the portal was open. It's, you know, it's crazy the way this system has been set up. And we'll dive into it here in a little bit. Okay, to last night, UConn and Purdue, what a great season for Purdue. And again, nobody is saying this morning, or said this morning or throughout the day, but to overcome last year. And, you know, when we had Rob Blackman on from the Purdue Radio Network last Friday, and, you know, I asked the question how much it's been brought up about avenging last year. And it wasn't just avenging last year by, hey, let's win a game. They had national championship on their minds. Like, the whole experience last year losing to Fairleigh Dickinson and losing in the first round to a 16 seed and being added to the list along with the likes of Virginia. And for the very next year with pretty much the same roster, for the most part, and to get to the pinnacle and get to the national championship game, nobody is bringing up that story at all. And they should, because that is really hard to do. A, it is hard to keep everybody together, as we were just talking about with the transfer portal. B, it's incredibly hard to get to this point. Matt Painter's been coaching 19 years. He had been to the Elite Eight once. And this is the group that gets him not just to the Final Four, but the national championship game. The mental toughness of this team, and, oh, by the way, the evolution of this team at season's end, because the rotation at season's end was different in the midst of their run to win the Big Ten by multiple games and to get a number one seed and to get all the way to the national championship game. It is an incredible run and should be celebrated that way. Doesn't make it any less disappointing last night that you didn't get it done. It's by no means to throw verbal bouquets and forget why you were there or anything, because, again, they'd be the first to tell you they wanted to win the darn thing. Obviously so. But that is not easy to do, what Purdue accomplished yesterday, to get to the national championship game after what occurred the year before. You know, talking about the demons of double-digit seeds and et cetera, that's all out the window. And, you know, while Purdue didn't win the national championship, you know, as long as Matt Painter stays there and that philosophy's in place, like, they're going to have a chance to win a national championship every single year. They will. I mean, just getting there is a huge deal, but it also shows that you are absolutely capable of winning the darn thing. Like, it's the breakthrough moment with one of the transcendent players of his generation in Zach Edey. And that sounds very, very, very lofty. But Zach Edey, from a numbers standpoint, there are very few that stack up to him, if any, to win back-to-back AP Player of the Year. He's not just big, folks. We went through that conversation a couple of weeks ago. He's darn good at what he does. Now, to the point where you can watch last night, and from a program standpoint, I don't care what level it is. I don't care. Youth level, middle school, high school, college, pro. That team following that game plan was so much fun to watch from a UConn standpoint. Now, I would imagine a lot of people in the state of Indiana were watching what Purdue was not doing and, you know, obviously gave UConn their praise because UConn was fantastic in the second half. They had 5 guys on the floor that could get to the rim at will. They had shooters all over the floor. And from a team defensive standpoint, they were fantastic. They play hard. And I mean very, very hard. There's playing hard, and then there's UConn playing hard. And when you say these things, you feel like it's a slight to everybody else. it's not a slight to Purdue at all. Matt Painter's one of the best coaches in the entire country. They have as good of a roster as anybody else because, oh, I don't know, they got to the national championship game. And the whole thing last night after Purdue lost, and there were local writers around the state of Indiana that said, see, this is why Purdue can't win a national championship. They can't deal with athleticism. How stupid is that comment? I mean, absolutely dumb. I don't know if you watched when they played Utah State, who had athleticism all over the floor, beat a Tennessee team, on their way to the Final Four. I would say that NC State was pretty darn athletic. I thought that that was an asinine comment. Terrible. Because, you know, writers, what they do sometimes is jump in and try to say why things happened without any context. And you can have your opinions, you can have your analysis, but I thought that that was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. UConn has won by double figures in every single tournament game, and they did it at the end, and they're great. You don't have to always say, UConn's great, but Purdue, they can't handle athleticism, when it's not true. Not true at all. So I won't mention the writer. It's a statewide writer that people know, but I thought that was absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, because they had played athletic teams all the way through to the national championship game. But this is the point I want to get across last night. Dan Hurley, that team, the discipline. So it was clear what the what the game plan was. Let Edie get his. Don't allow the shooters to get going at all. Now, I don't think Fletcher Lawyer was great yesterday. Mason Gillis struggled. Braden Smith had to work for everything he got out there. Lance Jones, etc. I mean, all of them really just struggled to get even open looks. But I go back to the first half, okay? Edie's rolling. I mean, does he have like 12 of the first 16 points of the game? And he was hitting tough shots on tough shots on tough shots. And here's what I saw from UConn. It would be incredibly easy for that team to, I guess, absent from the game plan. Because the game plan is you go single coverage on Edie with their 7-2 guy and Donovan Klingon, and put pressure on all of the shooters. Well, Purdue, as they normally do, dumped it into Edie time and time and time again, and Edie scores in double figures quickly. And I mean, I think really with the 10 minutes left in the first half, he was already up to 12 to 14 to 16 points, something along those lines. You know what you saw? You never saw UConn deviate from the game plan. Because in Dan Hurley's eyes and in the team's eyes, they were plenty content with Zach Edey going for 40 if he wanted to. Going for 45 or 50. Shoot, Dan Hurley said it after the game. But even with college basketball players or high school basketball players or whatever, you obviously know the game plan, but then the matchup that you don't want to beat you starts beating you. Like Edie did last night, they were okay with letting him do their thing, and yet the players, the defensive style, was disciplined enough to say, at some point, we trust our game plan. And you know what happened in the second half? UConn broke through. I can't tell you how many times where you have a game plan in place, okay, and Zach Edie goes for 12 or whatever, that, you know, teams panic, or even sometimes coaches panic. Where, oh my gosh, he's got 14 already. We got a double. So, you know, the matchup goes and it's one of those things. You know, I remember the Alabama game. Anybody saw the Alabama UConn game and the UConn player Stephon Castle hit a couple of threes early on. Alabama's game plan was to let him shoot. Well, he hits a couple threes early, and then Alabama comes out, and UConn just runs right past him. You know, we saw that with Alabama. Alabama changed their game plan, like, midway through the first half because, A, their game plan didn't work necessarily, but they panicked a little bit and started sending somebody right at him. I was very impressed. And you know what? You watched that early and you saw Edie get loose. And by the way, Dan Hurley had an interview after the first media timeout, or maybe it was the second media timeout, and said, we're fine. You know, we just got to stay in our spots. We got to get a little tighter on Edie. Other than that, we're good. And his game plan, he trusted his game plan so much, not only he trusting the game plan, but the players as well. I thought that that was an absolute masterpiece from a discipline program team standpoint. Because how many times have you seen, you know, hey, well, this team's got shooters and this team has a big man. You know, we're going to really just go single coverage on the big man. If he beats us, so be it. And then he, you know, gets to double figures early, and the team panics like, oh my gosh, he's beating us. We gotta send somebody at him. And then it opens up the three. You know, that's honestly what had happened with Purdue games throughout the tournament. Utah State wanted to shut down Edey. And again, you know, you would have understood had UConn said, hey, we're going to send two at Edey and take our chances with the other guys trying to beat us. Because that's what a lot of teams do, right? You don't want the best player to beat you, or you want the best player to work for everything that they have to go after. It's always been the back and forth with Purdue. Do you try to contain Edey, or do you try to shut down everybody else? It's the same with any level of basketball. Well, Dan Hurley and that team said, we're not going to let the three-point shooters beat us. But what often happens is things don't go well early. And your game plan, you know, UConn's game plan early on, you know, they felt like, hey, he's going to get some of his, and that's okay. But to have the discipline from a player standpoint where those guys stayed in their spots and they didn't send two at him. Now, the only time they sent two at Edey was when the Klingon 7'2 kid went out of the game. And then they had a younger, more athletic big and not a bigger guy. They sent two and forced the double team there. But that was for a very short period of time. I thought that nuance to that game was absolutely spectacular. And yes, UConn got rolling offensively. Purdue could never recover. Purdue had 60 points, and I believe 46 or 50 of those, I think it was 49 of those points came from Zach Edey and Braden Smith, the other 11 from everybody else. I don't think Fletcher Lawyer scored in the game. I thought it was absolutely spectacular to watch that. Because it's something that, again, I have talked to coaches before about this. When you're in a game plan and something's not working and deviating and all those different things, and Dan Hurley and that team just stuck to it. I thought that was incredible to watch. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people missed it because you're watching the Purdue angle and wondering why they can't hit shots and it didn't go well for them. And, you know, Edey was struggling late in the game, but, you know, he had to kind of put the team on his back. And this is what Dan Hurley felt. He said, if we get a double-figure lead, you know, we're good. Because what's Purdue going to do? Go to their best matchup in Zach Edey, and rightfully so for Purdue. That's their bread and butter, is the post up with Edey. The difference was nobody was double-teaming Edey on the catch. So there was coverage all the way around to Lawyer, to Smith, to Jones, to Gillis, to anybody that came in that basketball game. UConn wasn't afraid of Zach Edey dropping 37. Wasn't afraid of dropping 40, 45 points. The other part of it was this. UConn kept Purdue off the free throw line until late in that basketball game. Purdue had an immense opportunity in the first half when they got a couple of the big guys with two fouls early on. Purdue just couldn't put that gas pedal down to take advantage of that. But I thought the discipline defensively of UConn was absolutely incredible. And they're a very talented offensive team. But they take the personality of the coach and Dan Hurley and really lock you down defensively. I thought that was really fun to watch. And if you're a youth coach, high school coach, whatever coach, that was something fun to watch. It wasn't fun to, I'm sure, be a part of, but it certainly was fun to watch because any coach, any program can take a little bit of something out of that. To be that locked in from a team defensive standpoint and stick to the game plan, the discipline goes two ways. So it goes to the fact that, A, you're that great defensively as a team, but B, that everybody on that team didn't deviate from the plan at all. They trusted the plan, they bought into the plan, and they executed the plan. And when Zach Edey got rolling early, it never, ever, ever deviated their plan. You will see a lot of teams panic. You'll see a lot of programs panic in those moments where they're game plan early on. And it was a slow burn for UConn. Because, I mean, it was a 2-3 point game for the majority of that first half. Then they got it to 6 at halftime. And then they rode the wave right at the beginning of the second half. They knew that at some point it was going to break through. And it sure did in a big way. It was a tough result for Purdue. But, man, it is great to watch really impressive programs. And UConn is one of those back-to-back champions for the first time. Florida did it back in the mid-2000s. But it wasn't just that, oh my gosh, they got five guys that scored 20 points. No, it was deeper than that with the way that they operate, and darn was it impressive. So how many of you stayed up for that game last night? I did. It was fun to watch. Look, you got to give credit where credit is due to UConn. Wanted to see it for Matt Painter and that program. But I'll tell you, I don't think that's the last time they're going to get there. I really, really don't. I mean, I know that Zach Edey's a special player. I know it's kind of a once-in-a-generation centerpiece of that team. But I think Purdue will figure it out again. I really, really do. And they have a great recruiting class coming in. They're just going to have to operate differently, obviously, when you don't have 7'4", 7'5", Zach Edey. But now the conversation will transition to, hey, is Edey a pro player? I think he is in the right situation, but we'll see. So the college basketball season is over, and here we go for transfer portal stuff number two. I mean, wild, wild stuff. There's been a lot of reports from a Ball State basketball perspective, but I want to talk about it big picture. Not in actual specifics necessarily, but where we are, where we are for transfer portal as a whole. It's crazy. The transfer portal as a whole has gotten very wacky. We'll get to that coming up here in a matter of moments. It is a Tuesday edition of the Shell Power Talk on CWMUN. As always, present Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road right here in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. As recapping a lot of college basketball, of course, last night, the national championship game, and for the fourth time in the last 24 years, actually 22 years, if you go back to Indiana losing in 2002, an Indiana team has lost in the national championship final. So Indiana in 2002, the back-to-back years in the late 2000s for Butler, and then last night for Purdue. So three different Indiana schools have gotten to the national championship game in the last 22 years. It's weird to think that way. Yeah, 2024 to 2002, yeah, 22 years. It's kind of weird to think that way, but again, the years of Butler and then this one with Purdue, that IU team with Jared Jeffries, A.J. Moye, et cetera, Dane Fife, it feels long ago, doesn't it? It really, really does. I remember being on spring break in 2002, watching it in St. Petersburg when I was in elementary school back then. Anyway, there's a lot to recap there. Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, is going to join us from the sports department there. He comes up here in about 10 minutes or so. Look, there's been a lot of reported situations with the transfer portal for Ball State men's basketball. It's likely three of five starters are in the portal. Ball State obviously brought in Peyton Sparks, but, there's no timing exactly to when players actually enter their name, because Bashir Jihad and Davion Bailey, two of which that have entered. Jalen Anderson is already committed elsewhere. So that's three of your five starters that likely or possibly are elsewhere. Now, Bashir Jihad did keep the door open, and Davion Bailey did as well. But the state of the transfer portal is just interesting from a lot of different angles, because I go back to the quote that Tom Izzo had at the beginning of the March Madness for this year, talking about how we need to really look into automatic bids for conference championship winners across all of Division I college basketball. And at that point, you know, I had mentioned, you know, what more power do you want if you're a Power 5 school? You know, you don't have to play anybody in non-conference if you don't want to. If you place fifth in your league, you have a really good opportunity, as long as you played somebody Power 5 and beat them in non-conference schedule. You're going to get in the tournament over an Indiana State that has a net ranking, you know, 10 spots higher than you. So the powers are in a position of power, and we never even mentioned when we talked about it. I've talked about that a couple of weeks back, about the transfer portal and the power that they had. I don't know if you saw the contract details for John Calipari. John Calipari is moving on from Kentucky and going to Arkansas. The reported NIL package per year to spend on players for just men's college basketball is $5 million. $5 million to spend. Now, again, it's the way the situation has worked out, and, you know, the coach benefits from that, etc. But that's the budget at Arkansas, the Power 5. You know, for the NIL standpoint, and we're worried about automatic bids for mid-major teams in Division I college basketball. And then, you know, I know Indiana State's a special example with this, because their head coach Josh Schertz now took the job at St. Louis, and all five of his starters from last year at Indiana State are in the transfer portal. That might be a little bit of a what the transfer portal was kind of intended for. When a coach leaves, you know, he's not the guy that the new coach comes in, he's not the guy that recruited me, etc. But I just don't know where we're headed with this. Like, I feel like it's been 2.5-3 years where we've asked, where are the guardrails? I mean, where are the protocols for it? It's just kind of like, hey, this is when the portal opens, this is when it closes, this is when it opens again, this is when it closes. At the end of the day, coaches have no control on their team at all. It really, really feels like that, you know, because from a Ball State sports perspective, that's kind of where it stands right now. I would imagine a lot of teams in the Mid-American Conference are in this same exact window. But, you know, Ball State men's basketball had to kind of create on the spot last year with the transfer portal situation last year. Looks like they're going through the same thing this year. It is very hard to figure it all out. Now, as we've said before, and I truly, wholeheartedly believe this, you lose in the transfer portal, but you can also gain. The problem is, where continuity existed in college sports used to be at the mid-major level. Used to be. Now that's out the window, because, you know, you have a couple players that have great seasons in Mid-American Conference basketball, and they have a curiosity of what's on the other side of another Power 5 program. There's been a lot of rumor Power 5 programs for a couple of Ball State players. And who are they to say no to that opportunity? Kind of like last year when we talked about the Peyton Sparks situation. But it feels like this, that Power 5 teams have always had the advantage, and maybe rightfully so, and maybe that'll never change. But it feels like the stronger are getting stronger, while the mid-majors don't have a lot of legs to stand on. And the transfer portal may have been intended to help everybody across the board, but a $5 million NIL package for Arkansas compared to what? What Ball State has to compete with Mid-American Conference schools? It's a lot. And I just wonder, when the NCAA or whoever runs the transfer portal, which I believe it's the NCAA at last check, how in the world do you reel this in? Can you? Because it feels like the transfer portal is the one thing the NCAA can actually control. And they're not even controlling that. The NIL is out of their hands, like we talked about. The NIL is associated with the transfer portal, and it entices players to actually enter the transfer portal to see what's out there. I understand that. I get that. But it really... You know, the fears of fans have always been, well, you're recreating your roster every year. I got to tell you, early on, I didn't necessarily buy into that because it's like if you have 2 to 3 to 4 core players on a basketball team that stay, at least you have a supporting cast and maybe there's some ancillary players on the team that enter the transfer portal and you might bring in other guys. But it really, for Ball State, it kind of feels like that again this year, right? It feels like the team's going to look drastically different from last year, like it looked drastically different the previous year. And I'm not sure what fixes it. I'm not sure at all. It is a really interesting state. And again, for those that want the transfer portal abolished, that won't happen. So where's the middle ground? Is there an opportunity for middle ground? Is there a way that, you know, mid-major Division I conferences can actually get some benefits here? Or is it heading so far down the road for Power Fives that it completely alters college athletics even further than what we're currently experiencing right now? These are all the questions that I have, as others have asked me about it as well, and I think it's just incredible. It's always been hard to be a mid-major coach. It's even more difficult, right? Doesn't it feel that way? Like, what? I mean, it was already difficult. What is it now? I mean, ridiculousness, in my opinion. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So we'll see how it all plays out. Again, several of Ball State men's basketball's starters from last year are in the transfer portal. That includes Bashir Jihad today, Davion Bailey as well. So we'll see. Jalen Anderson is already committed elsewhere. The Cardinals did bring in Peyton Sparks, but you know there's work to be done, and it's hard to. Hard to keep tabs of it sometimes, to be honest with you. So, anywho, when we come back, we're going to talk about this and much more with Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News. Get his thoughts on everything that's going on with the transfer portal and everything surrounding Ball State men's basketball. And we'll talk a little bit about what occurred on Saturday in the Ball State football spring game. All of that and more coming your way on the final segment of a Tuesday show after this. Yes, welcome back in. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you're getting all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. As always, it's a Tuesday, and there's a lot going on from a Ball State sports perspective. It is Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News with us. Okay, you covered the Ball State football spring game on Saturday. We're going to get to the transfer portal stuff here in a little bit. What'd you think about what occurred on Saturday?
Yeah, it's hard to tell just because a spring game, at least for Ball State football, is essentially just a practice open to fans and media. You know, they did have some simulated play. I think 2 different minute sessions of 11-on-11. And I guess what stood out to me the most, outside of the fact that not in terms of actual skill or players, the guys were just really excited to be out there. I think that they were really excited to be performing in front of people again, and just to be on the turf because Coach New actually told me that was their first time practicing or doing anything on the Schumann Stadium field since they got back for spring camp because the weather has just confined them to their indoor facility. So they're just excited. And as far as skills go, it's hard to tell, especially just because there's still a chance that some guys transfer out. There's definitely a chance that new guys transfer in. But I think the wide receiving core, along with the tight end group, is going to be the X factor for this Ball State team. If this receiving core can stay healthy, you have two guys who are 6'3 and 6'5 at wide receiver in Ty Robinson and Bowick, who's a transfer from Eastern Illinois. And then you have Tanner Koziel back. And so all three of those guys are at least 6'3". They're established players, and they're good. So whether it's Kyle Kelly or Caden Semenza throwing to him at quarterback, they're going to have a lot of really big options.
Any sort of feel, because offensively I think there's a lot of intrigue. There's a lot more kind of wait and see on the defense because of so many experienced players that graduated from last year. But are we headed to a summer where once again there's going to be a battle for the quarterback position?
It seems that way. I was surprised to learn that Caden Semenza has been getting the majority or at least more first-team reps than Kyle Kelly in camp so far, especially with just Kyle. Kyle was 3-3 last year. He got three of Ball State's four wins, had a great season on the ground, a good enough season through the air. Semenza ended up redshirting. But it looks like it's going to be another competition, and I guess we'll see what happens week one. There are two vastly different quarterbacks, and so they're once again kind of in the same situation they have last year, where do you go with the guy who maybe isn't as established or as much of a sure thing as far as passing goes, but he's very dynamic with his legs, or do you go with the absolute sure thing when it comes to passing? I guess we'll have to see.
Defensively, hard to tell on Saturday, I would say.
Very hard to tell, yeah. And I think everybody except for two guys are new. I heard a lot of praise for a pass rusher out of UND, Justin Thomas. I'll be honest, I don't know much about him. And it was hard to tell just because you got limited exposure. It's more of a practice-type thing and a bunch of new guys.
Yeah, it'll be curious from a lot of different angles there. What are the next key dates for Ball State football in this offseason?
Well, I believe I don't have it in front of me, but it's either April 15th. I think it's April 15th is when the next window of the transfer portal opens up. And then from what I understood from what Mike told me, it's open from the 15th of April until the end of April. And that's your other window for the transfer portal. And then I think there might be one more other than that. But I also know that they restart practice together as far as structured practices go on May 31st. And so those are a couple key dates coming up within the next couple of months for Ball State football.
It's Kyle Smedley. Ball State Daily News covers Ball State sports for the publication with us on the Power Talk of Muncie. The new WMUN. What do you make of the last week with the transfer portal and not just Ball State men's basketball, but women's basketball as well? What do you make of it all?
I think it's been brutal. I don't know if there's a better way or a more honest way I can put it. Ball State men's team, Jalen Anderson officially signed with UIW. Bashir Jihad transfers. I guess he's not officially away from the program. He could come back, but he's getting a lot of interest from Power 5 schools. And then Davion Bailey plans to enter the transfer portal as well. That means all three of Ball State men's basketball's top scorers have either entered the transfer portal or have committed elsewhere from last season. And for the women's team, the Nyla Hanson news was shocking for me. I was not expecting her to enter the transfer portal. It seemed like that she was very close with the team. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that she's not close with the team, but a lot of times you think that that's going to keep a player around. And I guess she could come back, but it looks like she's transferring away. You just saw Anna Mule sign today with Manhattan in the MAAC. And then I believe that Anna Barit has also entered the transfer portal for Ball State women's basketball. So just brutal, and there's no better way to put it. It's tough, and it's hard to recover from losing players like that.
Yeah, and I guess my question, I've had this question from others, where does Ball State's experience with the transfer portal and having players enter like this compare to other Mid-American Conference schools? Any insight you can provide on that?
Yeah, so I believe that all but one of the All-MAC team selections last year on the men's side have entered the transfer portal. And so that's if you want to look at that as the 15 best players from the MAC from last season, 14 of the 15 have transferred or graduated, either one. And so it's not just a Ball State thing. It is happening at mid-majors all across the country. But I will say, Ball State, this is now 2 years in a row where Ball State has lost their top three scorers from this season. And the year before that, they lost their top four. So it's tough when you're looking at it from a Ball State perspective and you're focusing in on a Ball State perspective.
Well, and again, you know, as others enter, you're certainly diligently working to bring back. But
yeah.
In a lot of ways, does this put even more emphasis on how big the addition of Peyton Sparks was?
I think so, yeah. And you can look at it two ways. Now Sparks is, without a doubt, in my mind, the number one option, either him or Mickey Pearson, because Ethan Britton Watts is a question mark just because he missed all of last year and you don't know what you're going to get. However, on the flip side, who's going to get him the ball? You have to have guard play. Again, Ethan Britton Watts seems to be a viable option. He played well at Boston University, but after missing a full season, you never know. And so I would like to give Ethan the benefit of the doubt because he was a good player elsewhere. But it's a concern. And I know that it sounds pessimistic, but nowadays guard play is everything. And the exceptions to the rule are players like Klingon and Edie. And Sparks even plays really well in the MAC. So I do think that he is a big addition, especially for a team that needed big man depth. But I think the concern right now in basketball, while you're certainly happy with bringing Peyton back, I would be more worried about what I've lost.
Yeah, I understand that. We got about 30 seconds here, but the difference in timing, I think, is what throws people off. You know, the portal opened, I believe, the Monday of the first week of the NCAA tournament, and it was kind of quiet. And then, you know, it just kind of sprinkles. It's not like a fire hose and it's everybody entering at once. The timing of when people enter is different. Any perspective on, you know, do players get interest and then say, okay, I'm going to get in the portal so I can talk to them? Like, that's another question I get a lot about it. And again, you probably know as best as I do, but it's a question that I always want to put out there.
Yeah, and it's a good question. It really is. And I'll be fully transparent. There have been a couple instances where I've tried to reach out to players to try and get perspective as far as why they may have transferred away or entered the portal. A lot of times, until they've committed to another place, they don't want to talk about it. And so I haven't really been able to get any perspective as to why these players have left, much less as why they've left when they've left. And it has been confusing for me because another thing I'll be honest about, I really thought that Bashir was going to enter the portal a lot sooner than he did. And then when Peyton came back, Bashir seemed to be very excited about that. And I thought that, oh, you've got him. He's coming back because him and Peyton are really close friends. Then he ends up entering the portal anyway. So it's unpredictable. And you know that. We talk about it every week, you know?
Yeah, no question. It's Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News on it. There's a lot going on in the Ball State sports side of things. Thanks, my friend. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
It's Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News. I think that's part of it that I'm curious about, is the timing. And, you know, every time somebody enters, it's like, you know, 24 hours after, like, you know, 5-6 teams are after him. You know, do you have previous contact with these? I don't know. It's interesting in a lot of respects. So we'll dive in more to this and other topics throughout the week this week. Big thanks to Kyle Smedley and to all of you for listening. So far this week, we're back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, live at 4 o'clock here on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Have a good evening.